This is Fan Sided Radio.
Welcome. You are about to enter the control room.
The guys from the control room have found a new home. Wait, seriously? Someone listened to that piece of show and thought it was good? What, were they stoned?
You and I both know that marijuana can do very nice things.
There must have been better options than these three clowns.
We need to evolve into dudes who score.
No? Huh. All right. Broadcasting from Tempe, Arizona.
Yeah, you knew it was going to be hot when you heard that lonesome slide guitar and that hawk's cry.
Here's Rich Gray, Brett Harmon, and Sean Crespin. I still think this is a horrible one.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Control Room here on Fan Sided Radio. Happy to have you back. My name is Brett Harmon. I am the only one of the regulars here this week. Rich is off gallivanting in New Orleans somewhere, having himself a grand old time. So he's not here. Sean, busy as usual, so he's not here. But I am. Don't worry, I'm here. And I've actually called to the bullpen. I went to the righty from the bullpen, and I called out a guy from our past, Rich Gray and myself. He's a former coworker of ours here where we work at in Phoenix at NBC Sports Radio at AM 1060. And his name is Justin Karp. Hi, Justin. How are you doing?
Dude, you didn't just go into the bullpen. You went, like, into the retirement column, and you were like, hey, you know what? You haven't pitched in, like, 4 years. We're going to go to you.
Yeah, but you know what? Much like those wily veterans, I think you can. I think you'll be able to keep up. I'm okay with this.
Think I'll be able to rally.
Just a little bit. Justin used to work with us here in Phoenix, currently lives in Washington, D.C., doing stuff there, making the internet bow to his will on a daily basis. But we do have a very good show lined up for you here, Justin and myself. We're going to, of course, be breaking down the local news. The Diamondbacks on a absolute tear. The Suns getting ready for their fifth overall draft pick on June 27th. The NBA Finals are upon us. In fact, on the date of this recording, it is game one of the NBA Finals. It's happening in just a few hours, so that'll be going on. We're also going to be breaking down the NHL Playoffs Conference Finals. The Penguins, not looking too hot. The Bruins, looking fantastic. And in the West, well, that's just a good series. And then if we have a little bit of time, we're going to try and break down a little bit of Major League Baseball, the Biogenesis saga breaking earlier this week from ESPN. But let us start off, Justin, in Arizona, here in Phoenix. The Arizona Diamondbacks, they're on what we like to call a winning streak of a sorts. It's not a true winning streak. They did drop one to the St. Louis Cardinals, and they dropped a couple to the Texas Rangers and one to the Cubs. But nonetheless, you look at the Diamondbacks and what they've been doing. They took two from Texas here at Chase Field before they went and took two of three from the Cubs, and now they're on the verge of taking three of four from the National League leading St. Louis Cardinals. Justin, absolute unreal tear the Diamondbacks are going on, and now they're currently sitting with a two-game lead in the National League West.
Yeah, I mean, they're making a statement, and they're making a statement exactly when they need to be, because if you look at the NL West, apart from the other two divisions in the National League, that at this point is perhaps will end up being the only competitive one. The Braves are running away with the NL East, and it doesn't really look like they're going to be caught. The Cardinals are clearly the class of the National League right now. Obviously, you've got Pittsburgh is playing good baseball. Cincinnati is playing good baseball. That it'll remain competitive, but I feel like St. Louis is going to pull ahead in that. But right now, you've got the NL West as a crapshoot because you've got the Rockies, who are surprisingly playing very well. San Francisco is kind of off to their trademark slow start. They've won, you know, the World Series two of the last 3 years, but they've been simply a mediocre baseball team mm-hmm. until summer really gets going. The Dodgers are a non-factor, which really not surprising. The Padres are a non-factor, and then you've got the Diamondbacks. So this is a division that going into the year really was kind of up for grabs, and if the Diamondbacks can keep this up through June and get into July and go kind of without a really extended swoon, this division might be theirs for the taking. That said, it's June 6th.
Exactly.
You don't know where it's going to go into the next couple of months. They could dovetail and be at the bottom of the division. There's only 8.5 games between first and last in the NL West right now. So it's still a hyper-competitive division, but with San Diego and Los Angeles just not really looking like factors going into the summer, this is a three-team race. It's three games between Arizona and San Francisco. One of those teams gets hot, they can jump up to the top of the division. But right now, the Diamondbacks are getting good batting. You know, Goldschmidt is playing really well. They're getting okay pitching. The pen is okay. The starting pitching, by and large, is struggling a little bit, but obviously Patrick Corbin has been amazing. Right now, it's anybody's ball game, and if the Diamondbacks can keep winning games, they're 9 games up right now, and you know, who knows, maybe 9, 10, 11 games above 500 is what it's going to take to win the West.
Well, and Justin, you hit on it right there, and it's really the timely hitting from Paul Goldschmidt. He's heating up at the exact moment when the Diamondbacks need him to heat up. 2 grand slams on the road trip that the Cardinals are on right, or excuse me, the Diamondbacks are on right now. He hit one against the Cardinals last night, and the pitching, it's not the best. Let's call a spade here when it comes to Diamondbacks pitching. Really, they're getting great pitching from Patrick Corbin. They're also getting some pretty solid pitching from deeper in their rotation as well, occasionally from Trevor Cahill. And Tyler Skaggs has been a pleasant surprise in his one start so far for the Diamondbacks. But if they want to be able to really stay competitive, they're going to need their supposed ace, Ian Kennedy, to start showing the form that he showed 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at the back half of that rotation right now, Kennedy's got a 4.74 ERA. Wade Miley is 4.92. Brandon McCarthy, who was brought in on the offseason, they had high hopes for him to really be perhaps that number one or number two behind Ian Kennedy. He's, you know, throwing a 5 right now, and his whip is a little bit higher than Diamondbacks fans and management probably really want it. You know, Cahill's looking at a 3-6 record. Wade Miley's got 5 losses. You can't expect to win this division if you only know maybe you're going to get a quality start once every 5 days, if that guy is going to be Patrick Corbin. And to use a cliche that's so popular right now, you know, 9-0 with 10 quality starts is unsustainable. He's not going to do that every single day for the rest of the season. It's physically not possible.
No.
So if the Diamondbacks are going to hang on to this lead and really go deep into August, September and be a division contender, those guys at the back of the rotation are going to have to start making an impact.
Yeah, and I really feel bad for the Diamondbacks because they just get Willie Bloomquist coming off the disabled list, and then Eric Chavez, a very stable left-handed bat for them, goes on to the disabled list immediately. This team cannot stay healthy for any extended period of time right now, and that's what's killing them as well. I have to wonder...
Wait, are you really surprised that Eric Chavez, who's 170 years old, is on the disabled list? No.
Maybe a little.
He's been good this year. Very nice, pleasant surprise. And he's only 35. I'll give him that.
Yeah, but I just wonder how long can the bullpen hold up? That's what's holding the Diamondbacks together. They're getting a lot of great innings from the bullpen, and therefore, how long can that bullpen hold together? Eventually, the starters we just talked about are going to need to start going more than 5 innings a start.
Yes. Absolutely. You can't burn out guys like Josh Colmenger. You can't burn out guys like Tony Sipp and everybody else that's coming out of the bullpen and having to pull, you know, 3-4 innings a game for this team to win baseball games. And if you want to go deep in the postseason, you know, you see what happens to teams that have thin bullpens come the postseason. Look what happened to the Detroit Tigers last year. They rolled through the regular season, they played very well, and then the bullpen got a little bit thin. And when they needed the bullpen to come up and, you know, in the World Series last year, it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost. They got swept because their starting pitching was tired. It was good, but it was tired. And when those guys went out and the bullpen came in, it was disastrous.
Yeah. Well, let's not forget, we mentioned it, it's only June 6th. A lot can still happen. We're going to be keeping a very close eye on the National League West race. It's going to be a good one going down the road. Let's shift focus now over to the Phoenix Suns. They hold the 5th overall draft pick this year on June 27th. They're starting to bring guys in to Phoenix, working out pre-draft workouts. New head coach Jeff Hornacek is leading these workouts, believe it or not, himself. Shahbaz Muhammad,
that's because he's going to have to start.
Yeah.
I mean, let's call it, if you want to call spades a spade, Hornacek by midseason is going to have to be back on the court.
Oh, so we get a good old fashioned player coach here, Jeff Hornacek. I like
it. Kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah, that would be kind of awesome. But there's a lot of names flying around at who the Suns might take there at number one. Victor Oladipo, excuse me, Shabazz Muhammad, Ben McLemore, Cody Zeller. These are names that are flying around right now. These are the realistic choices that the Suns might take at the fifth overall selection. Justin, this team has a ton of holes in it. The only position where the Suns have a legitimate NBA starting caliber player is at the point guard position with Goran Dragic.
The thing with the Suns is that they were so bad last year that they've actually backed themselves into a position of pseudo power with this pick, because they don't necessarily they've got so many holes they need to fill that they can actually be put in a position where they can take the best player possible. They can take the best player on the board if they want to. You know, obviously Dragic is good. Jared Dudley's okay. PJ Tucker's okay. The shooting guard, they've got problems at center. Luis Scola, power forward, they have significant problems because Markieff Morris isn't a starter in the NBA. Michael Beasley certainly isn't a starter in the NBA anymore. There are a lot of players out there that could fall to that pick for the Phoenix Suns, and they're in a position where they can look at who's best available and say, well, guess what? Unless it's a point guard, that fills a hole. And so when you look at it up and down, I don't think that they can miss at this point. Well, they can always miss,
Suns, Justin. They've missed in the past when it shouldn't have been a miss.
Of course.
You know this just as well as I do.
I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you can look at any pick and it could be a bust or it could be amazing, but really what I think the Suns need to be looking for, if they don't get backcourt help at the two-guard position, you possibly start looking up front and looking at big guys. And I know he is a risk, and I know that his name has been floating out there a lot, but I really do think that if you've got a guy like Scola that can give you serviceable minutes and possibly let somebody learn from him and get adapted to the game, perhaps a little bit faster, you have to look at a guy like Alex Len if you're the Phoenix Suns. Now, obviously, as a Maryland guy, I have a little bit of bias, but I did get to watch him a lot over the last 2 years, and his rebounding game has gotten better. He's gotten thicker. He's a big seven-footer, and you know how hard it is right now to find talent seven-footers in the NBA.
Oh, my God.
If you can get a guy like Len, who's a risk, he's coming off of, surgery for a stress fracture, and you don't know how much you're going to get out of him early on in the season because he's on a 4 to 6 month window of recovery. But if he's there and you know that you need a big guy, I don't see why you don't take that risk on a guy like Alex Len.
You know what? You make a very valid point. The way I see the Suns approaching this draft pick is they know that whoever they draft is more than likely not going to be a linchpin player going forward.
Or
at least not the star player. What they got to look at this is a guy who, when they finally get their star, is going to complement that star. And that's really what this draft is all around anyways. But that's what makes me think that this pick is going to almost be a pet project pick for Jeff Hornacek. Hornacek, it was a great pull-up shooter. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't take someone like a Victor Oladipo or a Ben McLemore at that five pick, a guy who is big enough to make his presence known inside, but also has the ability to pull up, make that jump shot when it is absolutely necessary. And that way, you got a guy like Hornacek who was so good at that when he played and can teach that, pass that knowledge on to the next generation, and then make that guy your pet project. That's what this draft can be, especially at this high level. You just get a very talented pet project at that five pick, which honestly is going to be good for the Phoenix Suns.
Definitely. And I mean, we talk about how they have holes everywhere, but I think that, like I said, I'll advocate for Alex Len until the day of the draft. But if you're going to fill a hole that needs to be filled immediately, I mean, you can't go anywhere but the shooting guard position, because Shannon Brown and Wesley Johnson were just awful. They were so bad last year.
Yeah,
and if you don't have anybody playing in the backcourt with a guy like Goran Dragic, who is a good basketball player, mm-hmm. he's a very, very good player, but if he's got a guy next to him that's terrible, well, your backcourt is shot. So,
and I think that's why they're going to go to that shooting guard or that small forward position. Get somebody that Goran Dragic can actually distribute the ball to. Because how many times did we see Goran Dragic last year just make an absolutely picture-perfect point on pass, only to watch it brick out.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's why I think that we're going to see the Suns go in that direction. That's just my feelings on the matter. But then again, that's why I'm not a GM or a head coach in the NBA.
Definitely not.
Well, in the NBA, two teams that are not, they're going to be picking at the end of the draft, the Miami Heat and the San Antonio Spurs. It is set up. Game one is tonight. We are recording on Thursday, June 6th. So game one of the NBA Finals is tonight. The Heat taken to the limit by the Indiana Pacers. The San Antonio Spurs, not so much. They got to sit around for about a week and a half. Justin, what do you like more? Do you like the rust, quote unquote, on the Spurs, or is it rest at this point for them? Because they've been off for a long time.
You know, I think rest versus rust is kind of an overrated cliche when it comes to sports. I think that I was really thinking about it earlier today, and I was kind of thinking of the last time I looked at a game one where a team had a lot of time off and said, oh, they lost that game because they were rusty and they sat around a lot. No, I couldn't think of one. I think of, you know, in the moment when you look at a team for the first 7 to 10 minutes of a game in any sport and they're a little bit off and the passes are a little bit shaky and, you know, the set plays are a little bit bad. And you said, okay, they're a little bit rusty. But then by the end of the game, you don't necessarily say, okay, they lost that game because they're rusty. Perhaps they lost that game because they fell behind early on and couldn't recover. But I really, really struggle, especially with a team like San Antonio, who's so damn old anyway that they could use all the rest they can get. It's a team that sits down players in the middle of the regular season just because. I don't think that it's going to hurt a team like San Antonio going into this series. I think they're equal. I think Miami's rolling. I think they won a decisive game seven. They've got their opening here at home. They're obviously a great team, but they're playing a team that's got so much depth and so much experience going into this that I'm not worried about game one being this rest versus rust. I think both teams are going to come out flying and ready to show each other, hey, this is going to be a knockdown, drag-out series of two of the best teams in the last several years in the National Basketball Association. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to see, you know, are the new kids on the block really here to stay? Are we going to talk about not five, not six, not seven, not eight titles? Or are we going to talk about we're the Spurs, we're the team that wins because we're the Spurs?
Yeah, see, I've made this comment the past few weeks here on the Control Room. I believe the Spurs are already made of rust. Therefore, more rust does nothing to them. The team I worry about the least when it comes to extended time off and affecting their play is the San Antonio Spurs because of the veteran leadership that they have on that team between Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Tim Duncan. Those guys don't miss a beat at all. They've never missed a beat. And then, of course, you got Greg Popovich, the best coach in the NBA. He is going to have these guys ready. And you know he looked at that Pacers series. You know he's been game planning ever since he watched game one of that series, and he saw the Pacers take them to the limit. So you know he's going to have the Spurs ready to come at the Miami Heat. It's really not going to be an issue, I feel like. But it is the conversation that's happening when it comes to the San Antonio Spurs, just because they have been off for nearly 2 weeks now. And the Miami Heat are just coming off that epic Game 7 against the Indiana Pacers, where they showed that, oh, wait, we are the Miami Heat. We are still a team to be reckoned with. So don't sleep on us at all. That's just what I look at when I look at the San Antonio Spurs, though.
Listen, both of these teams are here for a reason. It's because they're the best teams in their respective conferences, and they've proven it. You know, did the Spurs catch a break when the Thunder went down early and they lost Russell Westbrook? Of course. But if you look at the way that the Spurs just absolutely stomped through the Western Conference Finals and really, really exposed a lot of weakness in the Memphis Grizzlies, you look at the way that they really handled a quick, tough Golden State team in the second round. This is a team that knows how to win. And excuse the cliche, but they do. Mm-hmm. They know how to win basketball games regardless of where they're playing, what floor they're on, how old their guys are, and what situation it is. A team that knows how to win basketball games, and they've proven it because the guys who are still there are the ones that were there when they were winning titles 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. So I'm not necessarily, like I said, I'm not necessarily worried about what perspective is going into this series. These are the two best teams clearly in the NBA come the end of the season. And I think both of them expect this to be a long series.
It's really rare when you can say that about the NBA. You got the two best teams.
Yeah.
It's rare when that happens. The Miami Heat got past the Indiana Pacers, basically on the sheer will and determination of LeBron James. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work against the San Antonio Spurs. LeBron James needs someone else on his team to show up here if the Heat want to win this series. Because the Spurs are going to have all three of their guys show up, plus someone else. It's what always happens whenever you play the San Antonio Spurs. But I just don't see LeBron James being able to sheer will his way past the San Antonio Spurs. He wasn't able to do it in Cleveland, and he's not going to be able to do it now.
No, and I mean, we already saw he wasn't able to do it in Cleveland because when he was in Cleveland, they lost to basically the same exact San Antonio Spurs team in 2007. And if you look at a guy that needs to support him, is it anybody other than Chris Bosh? You know, when you're going up against a guy like Tim Duncan for most likely 6 or 7 games, of course it has to be Chris Bosh.
But can Chris Bosh match up to Tim Duncan? That's what I worry about.
Because I know that Chris Bosh can probably unhinge his jaw and eat Tim Duncan at some point, but, you know, match up to him, only time will tell. Because here's the thing, because of the little tit for tat during the regular season where the Spurs sent their players home and the Heat responded by sending their players home, we haven't seen it yet. So we don't know.
We have no idea. Now, the Heat did win both of those games, mind you.
They did win both of them.
I don't know. See, the way I look at Chris Bosh is the same way I look at whoever has the unfortunate assignment of having to guard LeBron James. You're not going to stop him. Chris Bosh is not going to stop Tim Duncan. Whoever has to guard LeBron James is not going to stop LeBron. All they can basically hope to do is slow them down and maybe stop two of the other guys on the team. And I think that's easier for the San Antonio Spurs than it is for the Miami Heat, because Dwayne Wade has one leg. Ray Allen hasn't shown up at all. Udonis Haslem, can you rely on him to show up for more than one or two games at all? Where the hell has Shane Battier been? Has he been in witness protection since the beginning of the Eastern Conference Finals?
He's probably been hanging out at Aventura Mall for a while.
What's that?
He's probably been hanging out at Aventura Mall for a while.
But those are the guys that need to show up for the Miami Heat. I'm not looking at Chris Bosh as the big X factor for the Miami Heat, because Tim Duncan's going to be able to shut him down because he's Tim Duncan. He's that good. He might be the best power forward to ever play the game of basketball. Dwayne Wade is going to need to either put up or shut up. I know he's been playing hurt and he's on one leg, but you're still Dwayne Wade, guy. Come on. Show up. Do something. Yeah.
Well, and that's the inherent problem with the Miami Heat right now, and this is why eventually when we get to it, I will say that I think the Spurs are actually going to win the series, is that Tim Duncan, if he's able to shut down, and the Spurs are able to shut down Chris Bosh, then who do you go to for secondary scoring? Does it go to Mario Chalmers? Does it go to a slightly injured Dwayne Wade? Do you rely on a Udonis Haslem or a Chris Anderson to come back and play as well as he did in the Eastern Conference Finals? You know, is that reliable? You look at the Spurs, and perhaps you're able to neutralize a guy like Tony Parker or Tim Duncan. Well, guess what? They can go to somebody else who's very, very reliable, and it always seems like it's somebody else coming through for San Antonio when a guy is neutralized. So that, I think, really is the tipping point, is who is able to pick up the slack when the star isn't able to perform at the highest level. That is what, in my opinion, pushes the Spurs, surprisingly, past the Heat right now.
You know, Justin, we've been talking about the finals now for about maybe 3-5 minutes. We haven't even mentioned the names of Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. And that's what's going to win the Spurs this series. I'm not even going to hide anymore. I'm taking the San Antonio Spurs in 6 games in this series.
Yeah, that's mine too. It's weird. I have the Spurs in 6, but I weirdly have the Heat in 7 because they don't lose big games at home, which is really odd. But, you know, if it comes down to a 3-2 lead for the Spurs in San Antonio, yeah, I think the Spurs take game 6 going away.
Exactly. If it goes 7 games, the Heat are going to win it. But if the Spurs have that 3-2 lead in game 6, it's going to be the Spurs series to lose. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like the Heat are invincible at home.
No.
I mean, nobody's invincible at home. Nobody's been invincible at home since the Celtics in the 80s won like 43 or 44 games at home or whatever it was. If the Spurs can come out and win tonight or win game 2 this weekend, you go back to San Antonio 1-1. I mean, there's no reason that the Spurs can't win both games 3 and 4 down there in the Alamo and go back with a chance to win the series in game 5.
Yeah, so That's Justin, you just basically hit it all on the head. And I do think, but Tony Parker is going to be the reason why they win it more than anything else. I feel like he is the best player on the San Antonio Spurs at this current point in time, even as good as Tim Duncan is.
Yep, agreed.
Let's move on to the other playoffs that are going on right now, and that is the NHL playoffs, currently in conference finals. In the Western Conference, we're going to start over there because it's honestly, it's probably the lesser interesting of the two right now.
Well, it's the one that'll make you cry the least.
Yes, I'm also trying to put off my own pain. The Chicago Blackhawks currently hold a 2-1 series lead on the Los Angeles Kings. I believe game four in that series is tonight, June 6th.
9 o'clock Eastern.
9 o'clock Eastern. Thank you very much. So the Kings are able to come back in Los Angeles and get a game back. What, Justin, what was the big reason why? Why were the Kings able to do what they weren't able to do in Chicago? Is it just Jonathan Quick?
Yes.
Of course, when it comes down to the Kings, it's always about Jonathan Quick. He is they ride or die with him, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it last year, other than game six against the Devils in that final where they kind of just blew the gates open on Marty Brodeur. The Kings live and die by Jonathan Quick. They're not a great offensive team. You see it in the way that they dispatched San Jose in seven games. You know, they had so many 2-1 games in that series. They have offensive weapons, but they're not necessarily a great offensive team. The Kings can win this series because Jonathan Quick has been so outstanding, and he had a very subpar regular season, and they're the reason that the Kings, you know, were the five seed rather than perhaps competing for the division title. Or they competed for the division title, but they didn't win the division. Jonathan Quick is the guy that they ride or die with. And if he plays well again tonight and this series ends up 2-2, then it's a crapshoot. My gut still says that even if the Kings win tonight, the Blackhawks win the series in six, because I just think they're a better hockey team. I think the Kings are playing very well, but I think the Blackhawks are just far and away have been the best team in the NHL since day one. But you never know. As we've seen in the past, goalies can steal series. And Jonathan Quick is hands down the best goalie in the National Hockey League right now. I don't think there's any disputing that. Tuukka Rask has been fantastic. Corey Crawford has been good. But Jonathan Quick has been the reason that the Kings have won.
Yeah.
Literally. And he is the reason they have won hockey games since the playoffs started.
Let's look at it. He held them to 2 goals in game one. Mm-hmm. 4 goals in game two. It kind of got a little out of control there. And then 1 goal in game three. He is the reason the Kings are even in this series, because the Kings are not an offensive team. They are just not. They are a defensive, physical-based team. And the fact that they haven't scored more than 3 goals in any game in the series proves to that. And the only reason they have 3 is because in game two they got an empty netter. Otherwise, that's a 2-1. Otherwise, that's a 2-1 final. And I'm not having this conversation right now. So,
right, but we've seen it so many times before. J.S. Jagr. Yeah. Yaroslav Halak.
Yeah.
I can keep going here.
Carey Price a couple years ago, he might not want a cup, but...
Antti Niemi.
Oh, God, yeah, Antti Niemi.
Goalies win series. Ilya Bryzgalov, go all the way back to 2006. Ilya Bryzgalov. Goalies win series in the National Hockey League. They win playoff series. They are able to single-handedly win Stanley Cups. Yep. In the NHL. It's remarkable. It's the only sport that one player really can control a team's destiny. In the NBA, obviously, it can happen, but not as consistently as the hot goaltender. And that's why, remarkably, the Kings can still win the Stanley Cup, just like they did last year when they were an 8 seed, is because Jonathan Quick is so, so good. They can win this series down 2-1 because he is amazing. If they have to win every game 2-1 going away, that's fine.
Oh,
they actually have the ability to do that.
Yeah, and look, the Kings themselves are just a solid hockey team as well. I mean, this isn't all just Jonathan Quick. He is the biggest factor, yes, but they are still just a solid hockey team. Anyone on any one of their 4 lines can score that big goal at any one time. They don't rely on their big stars to really push them through. Like, say, the Pittsburgh Penguins have relied on their big stars, who have decided not to show up in the Eastern Conference Finals, as the Penguins are down currently in that series 3-0, being embarrassed in Game 2, 6-1, losing Game 1, 3-0, and then losing a double overtime thrower the other night, 2-1 to the Bruins. I'm going to try and not sob uncontrollably as we talk about this, Justin, but this isn't good for the Pittsburgh Penguins at all. I mean, they were the odds-on favorite to win the Stanley Cup coming into the Eastern Conference Finals, and they just haven't shown up during the Eastern Conference Finals. And it also doesn't help that Tuukka Rask is playing some of the best hockey you will see right now outside of Jonathan Quick.
Yeah, it's not necessarily surprising that the Bruins are up 3-0. Well, I'll take that back. It's surprising that the Bruins are up 3-0 in the series. It could easily be 2-1, obviously, which way the puck bounces last night. But it's not necessarily surprising that the Bruins have won the first three games in the series. What is surprising is that the Pittsburgh Penguins have scored two goals in nearly 3, 6, 5 in nearly, you know, 11 periods of hockey.
That's what's
and that Sidney Crosby is not on the score sheet, and that James Neal is not on the score sheet, and really the only guy contributing is Evgeny Malkin. And I know Kuhn had scored the goal last night and he's been playing well, but it's staggering how poorly the Penguins offense has performed in this series. And you can put that on Tuukka Rask, and that's great. And the difference between Rask and Quick is that the Blackhawks are creating scoring chances. And what's really surprising about the Penguins is that they're not.
Yeah.
And that's the Penguins' bread and butter, is they make scoring chances out of Primanti Brothers sandwiches. They pull them out of the air. And right now, they get bagel on Tuukka Rask. And that is what blows my mind, is you watch that overtime, and it's going back and forth, and it's great action. But you realize when you look at it, is the Bruins are just so significantly out-chancing the Penguins. And if you can't but even get the puck on the net, you don't win hockey games.
And this is despite 50 plus shots from the Penguins in game three as well. They put 50 pucks on Tuukka Rask. Only one went in the entire game. The thing I'm most dumbfounded by is Sidney Crosby. He is the best in the world right now. There's very little to dispute that, except for this series. He has been invisible this series. Actually, no, I take that back. He's actually been highly visible in this series, just not in any good way. He has been more of a detriment to the Pittsburgh Penguins than what he usually is, which is the best player in the world. I mean, you're watching Sidney Crosby out there make poor passes, making lazy, half-hearted attempts at pucks that lead to goals by the Bruins, and just being all around invisible out there. And it seems like the Bruins from the get-go have just owned property in Sidney Crosby's head, and it's completely nullified number 87.
Here's the thing, is that, you know, we talked about in the NBA, you can neutralize the best player and somebody will inherently pick up the slack, hopefully pick up the slack. And I think the Bruins came into the series and said, our goal is to stop Sidney Crosby. Mm-hmm. He's the best player in the NHL. He played half the season and he basically led the league in scoring. He's undoubtedly the best player in this game right now. We're going to take him out. We are going to put Zdeno Chara on him like a shadow.
Yeah.
And we're never, and Zdeno is never going to let Sidney Crosby out of his sight. And it's worked.
Yeah.
And so it trickles down to guys like Evgeny Malkin to pick up the slack and put pucks on net. And that's where Rask comes in. And that's where the rest of this really kind of no-name, faceless Bruins defense comes in and plays exceptionally well, clearing pucks from the front of the net, getting in front and blocking shots like Greg Campbell did a couple nights ago and, you know, or last night, and eventually breaks his leg and he's out for the playoffs.
Man.
You've got
that's
you've
a
got
hockey
really,
player right there.
The Bruins, the difference here is that the Bruins are playing exceptional team hockey and the Penguins are not, because the Bruins are neutralizing the Penguins' ability to play good team hockey.
And let's give full credit to Claude Julien for this.
Mm-hmm.
A brilliant game planning on his part, and Dan Bylsma has been completely ineffective in even attempting to make a comeback and making the adjustments to come back for the Penguins. It's just, it's boys against men out there right now in the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Bruins should, based on everything we've seen so far, should clean the series up in Game 4 on Friday night. One last thing I want to talk about here, Justin, and that is Major League Baseball. Big story this week coming out of ESPN from the mothership, and that is Biogenesis of America CEO, former CEO, Tony Bosch, working with Major League Baseball. And with that, Major League Baseball is now seeking 50 to 100 game suspensions for several high-profile players, including Ryan Braun and Alex Rodriguez. This is...
Yes, sir.
I mean, Is it just same old story with these steroid scandals in Major League Baseball again? I mean, for some reason this feels like it's more than just that. I don't know why. It just does.
It's interesting. I mean, here's the thing is A-Rod is obviously the centerpiece of this because everybody suspected him for so long, and considering how badly his body has broken down over the last couple of years, the guy can't even stay healthy, and it's, you don't want to assume things, but it is consistent with somebody who no longer uses steroids and how quickly his body was able to break down on itself. You know, it kind of just collapsed in on itself. But let's be realistic. When you talk about impact, taking Alex Rodriguez away from the New York Yankees right now is like taking the pacifier away from a 22-year-old man. In the long run, it's not going to hurt the team very much. The person who has the most to lose out of this, both on the field and in terms of reputation, is Ryan Braun.
Yeah.
Because if you talk about a guy who was suspended and then had his suspension retracted, basically, let's not forget what kind of a scorched earth campaign he went on immediately. Mm-hmm. Immediately, he didn't even wait. He was like, well, my suspension's been wiped off the books, gonna clap my hands, get in front of this microphone, and basically tell everybody to go to hell.
Yeah, I remember that.
Let's not forget calling out baseball, calling out the steroid policy is weak, calling out Bob Selig. And now, if it comes back to him and they say, yeah, you did it, and now you really are suspended, and that's the end for Ryan Braun. That is, because now no one will trust him anymore, and everybody will look at him as the guy that beat a suspension that he shouldn't have beaten.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're right. Brian Braun has the biggest amount to lose here, but I'm going to be interested to see how much of this actually sticks. You know, the Players Association is going to fight it if they can, because the MLB Players Association is there to basically make everybody's life a living hell, including fans.
Of course,
this is going to be dragged out for months on end. But it is the big story in baseball this week. Not much else going on. The Major League Baseball draft happened today. Mark Appel of Stanford is the number one overall pick by the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. Not that surprising. He's been rumored to be the number one overall draft pick for a while. And that's really all that's going on in baseball. I mean, we're now getting into the dog days of summer, where it's just day after day of baseball. I was interested to see that Steven Strasburg went back on the disabled list, though. Another trip to the DL for Strasburg.
The Nationals are a mess. I mean, let's be realistic here. The Nationals are an absolute mess. Strasburg is back on the DL. He hasn't performed well this year. I mean, nobody on the team has performed well at all this year. They're a game under 500. They're well off the pace that they were last year when they basically went wire to wire and won the division. The bigger story came out today is that Bryce Harper is going to have to go see James Andrews now. And so that completes the hat trick of prominent DC athletes that have had to see James Andrews in the last couple of years, because you've got Strasburg. He ends up with Tommy John surgery. He sees RG3, who has his ACL reconstructed again for the second time. Mm-hmm. And now it's Bryce Harper, whose knee swelled up on him again this week. I found it funny that ESPN decided that they were just going to show Bryce Harper running face first into the wall at Dodger Stadium over and over again for some reason. They're like, hey, it's his knee that's swelled up again. Let's show him running face first into a wall.
But it's funny. It's
not good. It's really not good here in DC. And beyond that, it's not good because you had such a good feeling about the team in this town, and you thought that they were going to be the odds-on favorite to win the World Series this year in many circles, and then it comes out and Strasburg is ineffective. Harper's hurt. Zimmerman misses time with injuries. Dan Heron has been a disaster, basically. He's pitching his way out of the rotation the way he pitched against the Mets a couple nights ago. This is beyond Strasburg, and this is beyond Bryce Harper. This is a team that's underachieving, and it's a lineup that's underachieving, and it'll be interesting to see the way they pick it up, because by the way that they're performing right now and the way that they're piling up injuries and the way that the division is going, I mean, this is a team that had the best record in the NL last season. They could be out of the pennant race by late August.
And that's not good, because it was starting to look so good there up with all that young talent. Oh, well. That's going to do it for another edition of The Control Room. Justin, thank you so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it.
It is my pleasure.
You didn't miss a beat. I mean, this retirement thing, you should think about coming out of it permanently.
All right, that's all we'll I'm see.
Thinking. Rich and Sean should hopefully be back with me again next week. Hopefully Rich doesn't get lost permanently in New Orleans and Sean doesn't get lost in Las Vegas. I might be here again next week on my own. Justin, you might need to come back again.
Dude, I don't know. Those hurricanes in New Orleans are no joke.
No, that's very true. Oh, I shouldn't laugh. Well, for my guest host, Justin Karp, my name is Brett Harmon. We'll catch you next week in another edition of The Control Room here on Fansided Radio.